Tonight, we are covering the Mets, the New York Mets, the 718 area code Mets who play at Citi Field. I didn't need to Google it before. I knew the name of the ballpark. It's time for Dingers.
This is Dingers, way more than fantasy baseball. We keep it real when we talk and knock it straight out the park. Let's see the stats. What's the average draft position? What kind of plays you making? Check the wins above replacement. Check the lineups and the points. This I gotta see. What's your path to victory? Are they aiming for a dynasty? Get points going head to head. Please don't do me no favors. We're always watching waivers. Ain't no minor league. This is major. Yeah, Dingers. Let's go.
Welcome to Dingers, the only fantasy baseball podcast for smart people. It's not just Pete Alonso that wins you championships. That's why week in and week out, we're delivering tips and strategies to help you live that straight up OG lifestyle. Tyler Childs with Robbie Baseball from the Murder Room. He's jacked up. We've already mentioned Pete Alonso once.
It's a good night.
He's here. Good night. We have friend of the show, Glenn, back from the archived episodes. Glennie, welcome to the show, buddy. How you doing?
Oh, you know, it's great to be here. I'm glad I can resurface from Robbie's basement that I've clearly been locked away in for the last year or so.
You've been locked up for roughly 140 some episodes since your previous appearance on the show. But hey, that's fine. You've been busy.
I'm glad that Glenn finished all his chores this week and he's allowed to call you Rob instead of Mr. Rose.
Well, he's gonna have to fix the lock that he broke, but other than that, yeah, we'll be fine. So this is good. Great pick. So Glenn is in the home league. I don't want to say our home league because he was in it long before I was. Were you an original member day one, Glenn?
I was not an original member. I was about year five is where I joined the home league.
Okay. All right. And and then our league this year will be drafting. When is it? It's not next weekend.
March 27th. Glenn is also co-commissioner of that league now.
That's right.
Yeah. Don't forget that elevated status I have now, Rob.
I saw the post. Well, I mean, I got to be co-commissioner for a day when Ty decided he couldn't make the draft that everybody had to make 2 years ago when we did it. So
that was not my choice.
I understand the powers of the Yahoo commissioner system and ad. And through that fantasy baseball universe Facebook group, there are some, I think it's that one, it's that, or there's some like join group, you know, fantasy baseball league finder thing, whatever it is. There's some intense conversation going on there with people having issues with drafts and shady commissioners and all these things, and I just feel like, you know, they should just listen to this. They should listen to Dingers,
or they should just start drinking.
A long time ago, someone decided to put stuff in glass bottles. In some of these bottles, they put juice or milk, and that was stupid. Today, only alcohol and a few other products remain in the containers from the gods. It's time for beers and bourbon, because good advice only comes in a bottle.
Ah. Did that open?
How do you not hear that? Comes through.
That was the quietest opening I've ever heard.
Oh, yeah. You'll get it. You'll all get it.
You know what it is? Like, that's like a soft close for a cabinet. That was the equivalent of your beer opening, right? Like, it just, there was no, nothing there. Glennie, what are you drinking this evening? I saw you had something over there.
Yeah, I've got a Bruce Nuke Imperial Lager from the microbrewery Grey Matter here in Kincardine.
They should call their beer a Bruce Nuke. Like, that would just be a great beer name.
Brucey Nuki, that's new.
Or like Bruce Wanuski?
Like Bruce Nuski, just, or Bruce Nuki or whatever, just flat. I think that would go over well.
I'll put it in their comment box.
Robbie, I saw like flashes of another type of beer for the first time in 2021.
Yeah.
What do you have here?
So fun story, because the weather's been a bit better. I cleared out the section of my garage that I'm supposed to park in, but I've slowly turned it into extra boat storage. And I found, well, I knew they were there, but I dug them up, and it's an American pale ale. I guess that's just for political reasons that it's not an India pale ale. So maybe it's from Cleveland, but it's Transatlantic. This is Abe Herb Brewing Company in Waterloo. So this is the company that had the fraud charges and things late. Like, they just closed overnight. But this is one of the beers that I bought in the fall, and I tried one. I was like, oh man, that is hoppy. I didn't want it. And I found another 12 pack of Waterloo Dark. Okay. So because I was so upset that I found that, I'm like, I'm not drinking that tonight. Unless this Aber Transatlantic is horrible. And it is hoppy, but I'm going to give it a go because we've got a trio of episodes to get through and it's important. But it is a 6.0, so it's not going to take too many before I'm extra loopy.
Well, and I'm starting slow tonight. I have the green tea starting this. Knowing that we're in a power record session.
Did you look up the combine it with bourbon thing?
No.
It's a thing.
There's bourbon and tea. Bourbon and tea together is not a thing. I don't know. I don't care. I'm not a hybrid guy.
Glenn, we were joking leading up to tonight that it was going to, for Ty, it was going to need to be a Jager Bomb night. And I said, like, I got it. So, you know, Jager and Red Bull. And he declined. So,
well, and you didn't even mention the game that I was thinking about around the Jager Bombs during the Cardinals record.
What was it? Oh, the O'Neill over under?
Yeah, that I would do a Jager Bomb for every Tyler O'Neill home run this season.
Oh, for every, well, okay. Well, we'll say that now. Ty's going to do a Jager Bomb for every O'Neill dinger this year. But we're not talking about O'Neill tonight, even though I think that's three times now. Glenn had the floor when we were discussing teams he wanted, and he picked two very fun teams to talk about, not because they're dumpster fires like his fantasy teams, but because they are interesting. The first one, the Mets, who we're covering tonight, controversial offseason that they had, you know, acquiring Lindor, firing the general manager, you know, the owner, Steve Cohen, being on Twitter and then leaving Twitter, Barstool, what's his nuts, attacking him and everybody else through the whole stock thing with the stuff. But anyway, that's all off the field when we're here to concentrate on the field itself. So, Ty, do you want to hit us with our estimated lineup for these Mets?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's just dive right in. I actually think Lindor is going to lead off on this team. And I know that's probably going to be an unpopular decision. And I think you could see a real wide range after that. Like for me, I'm running Lindor, Conforto, Alonso out there to start. And I know some people like Nimmo. I don't really have a problem with Nimmo, but I want to package these three guys and I want to follow them with Dom Smith. Right. I don't want to miss the ability to pair Alonso and Dom Smith. And then I think you set the table again with Jeff McNeil, then Nimmo and JD Davis. Right. And I think Nimmo could potentially be hitting ninth or eighth, wherever the Mets like to bat their guy.
So you're, in this instance, though, you're putting him six. So you're going Lindor, Conforto, Alonso, 1, 2, 3, and then Smith, McNeil.
Yep,
you're saying Nimmo right now is at set.
Six. I'm thinking it's going to be one of JD Davis or McMahon after that.
Okay, so Nimmo will just punch in here at eight.
Yeah, that's where I think it'll land. And again, I'm a huge fan of the alternating handedness in the new format with a three out relievers. I think that's a super. It's going to be more beneficial to set your lineup with alternating bats than it's ever been in the later part of the game. Now, what we could see as an evolved part of it is we might see what Tampa has done, which they load the lineup on one side, knowing that they have a heavy-handed bullpen, and then they load those guys into the game when those guys come in. But this team has more of a veteran lineup. I would be surprised to see them do that. I think it's going to be McNeil. I could also see McNeil hitting ninth or eighth as well. Like, this one's a little interchangeable for me, but I do think the top four, if they want to be as successful as possible, need to be Lindor, Conforto, Alonso, Smith. Like, I don't think there's a better lineup set up for that team. What do you guys got? I don't see any other way to do this.
I mean, I personally have Nimmo as their leadoff starter, and he's already hitting off spring training here really well with a high OBP. So, you know, that tells me runs. And that translates directly into fantasy values sitting right in front of Lindor. So I agree with you, Lindor, Conforto, Alonzo, Smith, but I think Nimmo is going to provide that team some value getting on base to top that lineup.
Well, let me ask you this. Like, do you guys think they're going to back Conforto up behind Alonzo?
I think Conforto, I think it is Nimmo, Lindor, Conforto, because you go left, switch, left for your love of it, Ty, if they've got
you're
a right
hand. Sacrificing 50 to 75 at bats for Alonso by doing that. I don't think that makes the Mets better.
Well, you're not necessarily doing that because Nimmo's got a decent OBP and his OPS, I believe even last year, was north of 800. So if he's, and that was with the DH, so that might, you know, that can tick down because you got a pitcher less incentivized to be running the base paths, but you've still got good guys to get on base and slug around to be there for Alonso.
Still going to be 50, 75 though. Like it's still going to be there.
Let's say it's 30. You know, let's say it's one extra weekend he plays that he otherwise wouldn't. I think it's pretty minimal versus having him, because you're talking about one spot in the lineup, whereas for Nimmo, you're talking about 100 at-bats. And I don't think the Mets are going to want to take away 100 at-bats from him and then slowly inch James McCann, Davis, McNeil up, you know.
But I guess my question that I'm stuck on, and I think it's the relevant point here, like, are you valuing those extra at-bats you're going to get out of a Brandon Nimmo over the 50 to 150 at-bats that you can get in the combo of Alonso and Smith by bumping them up, right? Not to mention the compounding value for Conforto and Lindor ahead of them, right? Like, I don't think Nimmo, if you're looking at the true AB outcomes, I don't think that Nimmo makes sense there. But, you know, this is the stuff we talk about all the time in fantasy, Rob, right? Like, these are the calculations that win you a championship. So this is a really for me, this is probably the most important fantasy decision on this roster.
I agree with that because it's pretty straightforward as far as where everybody should slot in now. I mean, before the season, there were a lot of questions about what's going to go on with McNeil and Davis and you know, what's up with third base, second base. Depending on, you know, the pre-Lindor trade as well, there were lots of questions because the bench now looks really weird for the Mets. Like, they've got 2020 starter Kevin Pillar, 2020 starter Albert Almora Jr., Jonathan Villar, and then you've got two actual backup style players in Luis Guillermore and Thomas Nitto, whatever.
Guillermo?
You get the idea. We got, you understand, everybody understands what I'm saying, but you've got three legitimate options off your bench, two outfielders, and then you've got a love them, hate them, Jonathan Villar, middle infielder. But when you had Robinson Cano on, that was possibly pushing McNeil, you know, out to left field. It was pushing Davis out to left field. And when you had Amed Rosario and Jimenez, it was a lot more convoluted as to who was going to play where and how were the at-bats going to sort out. Now it looks pretty set up. Pilar's the guy who I think is getting the shaft here as far as offensive potential goes. But as we all know, having seen a lot of him, that comes and goes. And then VR, who came to Toronto last year down the stretch, didn't make any friends in the clubhouse, apparently, didn't show himself to be any kind of a good mix for that team, and then faded. And now it looks like he's a bench player. But people are swearing by him getting 400 plus at bats and still being able to go north to 25 stolen bases. It's fantasy relevant, but it's like the worst team in your league owns him fantasy relevant. Like, I would have owned him, you know, 5 years ago. It would have been like VR early and often in my drafts because I'm like, stolen bases, you know, that's what I need, not realizing that I'm getting nothing else from him. And I think that's the point that we are at with him as a Met right now. Everybody else on that team, they all look like decent contributors, right down to mechanic catcher.
Yeah, and I guess part of my concern with Nimmo, like, if you drill into the ABs for Nimmo this year, like, is so far in the spring.
Sorry, spring training stats. I just want to take my headphones off while you say this.
Yeah, but his at-bats have come against, or his hits have come against Carlos Martinez, right, who got lit.
Never heard of her.
Right, and Pete Solomon, who's coming back from Tommy John, right? So you've got those guys, and then he goes up against John Lester today and goes over, right? So, like, these are the things that people miss in spring training stats. Like, yes, he had seven hits, but just because he faced some double-A guy that was getting stretched out doesn't make it effective. So this is the guy that I'm not locked into. Yes, Glenn, he has had a couple games in that leadoff spot, but I think he's going to slide back. And they have alternated with McNeil, who I think would be the better option at the top if you are going to wedge out Lindor, in my opinion.
Well, you know, What's your, like, Glenn, is there a must own guy that you see in this lineup that's providing a little bit of everything for you? Or are you like, I mean, I'm a Pete Alonso owner in our home league. I won't trade him. Don't try. But what are you seeing in this Mets lineup that you're like, yeah, I'm into this.
I mean, I've owned him before. Michael Conforto is usually one of the most consistent outfielders you can get without having to pay a high price for him. And he's, you know, he's shown that year after year. You know, he does only hold that outfielder eligibility, but you know, he's super safe that you can get in the third to fifth round at the earliest that you could feel comfortable having in your lineup.
Yeah. For Conforto, is that who you're saying?
Yeah.
I think this is really the first year his value's jumped, right? Like, I mean, he's been a guy that a lot of people have had as a favorite of theirs, right? But I think this is the first year you've really seen his ADP climb to justify some of the production. He battled some injuries over a couple of years, and I think people stayed away from him for that reason. But I don't hate this roster. Like, this 1-9, and even the bench, like, the bench is strong, right? Like, Thomas Nitto did some things okay for fractions of last season. Guillorme is just a depth piece, right?
Like, yeah, you say it. Say it again so the people in the back can hear
Guillorme,
you.
Guillorme.
This is when I usually just spell it, Glenn, and then I just forget about it.
That's the best.
Yeah.
Jonathan Villar, Alberto Mora Jr., Kevin Pillar, right? Like, you have three guys there at the end of that bench that are borderline starters on most teams, right? So that, I think there's a lot of depth here. They're going to do some good things. So let's jump into the rotation, because they did a little bit of work in this offseason. They obviously have, you know, the Cy Young candidate, Jacob DeGrom.
Stroman. Right? Oh, sorry. Who is it?
Hey, I'm with you on that one, Robbie.
Oh, no. DeGrom.
You're tied to that now. You said it. You're tied to it now.
It was a joke.
Well, I got a new soundbite for that one.
Nice catch, hey. Don't ever fucking do it again.
Swearing on the drop. We typically don't swear when we're doing it. But sorry, Ty, I cut you off.
Dropped it. Yeah. So Taiwan Walker, who we saw in Toronto last year, I'm a fan of Taiwan Walker, except for when it comes to the question of will he be healthy, right? And that's the thing that has plagued him his entire career. Stuff has been good all the way through, right? It's just a matter of, can he stay out on the field long enough to provide value? We still don't know, right? We're in year, whatever, 8 or 9 with Taiwan, and we still don't know. So David Peterson, for me, is the scariest guy of this group. The guy that had flashes last season of good and really bad. He's kind of the Thomas Nitto of this rotation. Carlos Carrasco is obviously a guy that's already getting MRI'd.
Right.
And that scares me. I was not upset. I know a lot of Jays fans were when they saw Lindor and Carrasco go. I like Lindor, love Lindor. We don't need Lindor, which for whatever reason, a lot of Jays fans believed we did. But this is the biggest reason I didn't like that trade, was that they put a lot of value around Carrasco. And he's battled a lot. He's been through a lot personally. So I think there's some wear and tear on that body. And so that's it. Bringing this out is Joey Lucchesi, or Lucchesi, however you want to say that one. I'm good either way, tomato, tomato. And then the only notable injury is Noah Syndergaard in that rotation, who's due back in about June or July, I believe, is what they're targeting.
Yeah, it's a matter of if they're going to slow play him or not. And I can't imagine they wouldn't do everything they can to bring him back at leisure instead of rushing him through. They want him for the dog days. That's the perfect guy when you're ready to go sixth man. You know, if you end up with some rainouts early in the season or whatever happens, that's the perfect guy. But like, that rotation, as far as spunk goes, is good, right? You've got like two potential ace guys in Carrasco and DeGrom. If healthy, you've got three with Thor, not likely this year to say, you know, ace stuff. We've seen guys coming back from Tommy John just not have it. But then you've got Stroman, totally underrated. And as Ty talked about after the trade last year, 2 years ago, and last year after opting out, he's got a better defense now, so it should help him out as a ground ball guy. Walker, same thing as you said, like, if he's healthy, he's good. And then rookie last year, David Peterson, who was a first rounder in 17, and then Joey Lucchesi, who just pitches, throws baseballs. Like, I don't know that I'm a big fan. I don't have any DeGrom shares because of his cost, But I do have, I think, a little bit of pretty much everybody else. So, Glenn, where are you on this? You got what, four righties and two lefties plus Thor.
I've trusted Walker and Lucchesi in the past and I've gotten burned. I typically will, I'll monitor them as they play throughout the season, but not the kind of starters that I would be relying on for a long season stretch. Really looking to see, just how they play Syndergaard, because that'll be a huge difference to how that team is successful this year. And as far as Carrasco is considered, I saw a report that it's a confirmed tear in his hamstring. So I don't expect him back anytime soon. So if you're willing to pay for DeGrom, he's gonna pay out for you, in spades. But you are gonna have to pay heftily for him. And as much as I love Stroman, I've never been able to trust him. Although he does have the stuff to be a quality pitcher, but definitely wouldn't be an ace on any fantasy team.
Vanity metrics through the roof on Stroman.
exactly. Time. Yeah, I mean, we obviously know where he's going. I'm looking forward to Stroman this year because, like, this is a guy, and Rob, you and I have talked about this over the years here. Like, Stroman's a guy that delivers in the moment. Like, there's only a handful of guys that I want to give the ball to in the big moments. And Marcus Stroman's one of those guys for me. And we've seen it with our own eyes in Toronto. I think a lot of people miss that part of him. And frankly, he's just been consistent because of the stuff. The stuff is as good as anybody's in baseball, with the exception of like the knockout fastball. That's the one thing he doesn't have, but he's got good sink and he gets the ground balls to make up for that difference, right? But everything else in his repertoire is sharp. And if you're a baseball fan, you know that.
And he's intense. Like, he's a polarizing guy. Love him or hate him, he's an intense player. And when he opted out last year, some people were just saying, oh, blah, 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 selfish, whatever. Look at what the owners were doing to the players last year. We're not getting into that tonight, but Marcus Stroman did exactly what owners were doing to players. And when the time came that he could have left, he opted out. That was within his right to do it. And he was able to get a healthy qualifying offer for this year. He took it. And this is, this is the result right now, is that he gets to come back to the Mets and a revamped defense for him to go through. And the bullpen, which we're about to touch on, doesn't look too different, but the right pieces may have arrived that could really help them. So I don't know, Ty, if you want to go into that bullpen here. Yeah. I know we discussed it once on an episode, but Glenn's
absolutely
here.
And then just quickly on Stroman, ADP is way back of what his value should be. So
always
you're
is
looking for a buy low
kind it's of the guy, strikeouts
guy. Yep. Exactly. So bullpen, Trevor May is the real big addition here, which kind of slots everybody down, right? So Edwin Diaz, obviously the guy until he loses it. He could be the best in the game, depending on which guy shows up. So I know I saw some things about his fastball being closer to a gyro ball and that being the reason it flattened out. Da, 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 da. So we'll see what adjustments he makes this season. But Trevor May has just been quietly productive for a while now in Minnesota. So it'll be interesting to see if that continues. Miguel Castro's a guy that had electric stuff. It's still okay. I'm not willing to say he's like the next man up in the setup role. You still got Dylan Betances there, Jerry's Familia, who are all capable of that role, depending on
the good guy five up. Guys, though, like that as a six, two, four. Yeah. It's a good back end of the bullpen, no matter how they roll it out. But like you said, Ty, like Diaz had the blow ups last year, but the numbers by the end of the season were fine. Trevor May, when Minnesota was really trying to get it together a couple years ago, May was blowing saves along with everybody else in that pen before Rogers ended up taking the job. So this might be his time where he's kind of ready now, he's matured. And then Miguel Castro. Yeah. Like, I mean, I like his stuff. I'm trying to get him everywhere for cheap league minimums and salary leagues. But it's knowing him for ratios in save hold leagues more than saves. I'm not expecting him to somehow be able to get 20 saves this year. Like it's 20 save holds. That would be an expectation.
Like from a safety net perspective, this bullpen is where you do not want to build your roster. If you want to take some risks on some guys that could overperform or outperform their ADP, these are guys almost top to bottom that could potentially do that. Now, one notable name here that rumors have said, been impressing. I haven't seen anything I'm just completely speculating off of reads from other publications. Jacob Barnes seems to be impressing the brass in New York. So we could see Jacob Barnes crack the squad this year. No options. So I think it's a safe assumption he'll be there. Seth Lugo, in all likelihood, could be the odd man out. He's battling a small injury. I don't know what he's dealing with, Robbie, but I haven't heard anything devastating. Is it?
I don't know specifically what it is. I just had him listed as injured based on where he was sitting in camp. So I don't specifically know what it is.
And then to round it out, Mike Montgomery is the most underappreciated lefty swingman in the game, I think, at this point. So just the guy that quietly was productive in limited innings in Chicago and Kansas City over the last couple of years. So a guy that just has bounced between. I think he had a stint in Rob's favorite farm system out in Seattle as well. So Glenn, anybody in that bullpen that you're loving or hating?
I appreciate that lead in. I was actually quite excited to see Mike Montgomery on this squad, even as a non-roster invitee. I think he can provide a lot of value here, but most of these guys, they're not going to be your top closers or your top relievers, but they can definitely help out from a non-counting stats perspective. And I'm looking forward to seeing if Dallin Betances can kind of turn this around and not be a shell of his former self going forward.
Yeah, he certainly hurt a lot of dynasty owners the last 3-4 seasons.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you get for betting on Yankees. You deserve it. I'm sorry, I had to throw that in.
Hey, in our best ball league, Ty, you know that's half my damn team.
I'm throwing shade directly at that. I'm glad you caught that.
It's just like I opted for power to start that sucker off. It's a 40 man best ball. Geez, words are tough. And that we're doing through Fantrax, just did a public one just for fun because we wanted to go through the best ball experience a few times so we could speak from a place of experience with it. And the draft process was somewhat frustrating just because of the flow. And I think when you get into lower dollar leagues or low, you know, not on NFBC specifically, people aren't necessarily following ADP or logic. They're reaching out and getting a lot of their guys. So some of these Met relief pitchers like Betances, I think were drafted because people were just so pitcher nuts. You know, they were looking for anybody that might be 50 plus innings. So a prospect like Gore slips and slips and slips. And then some report comes out and goes on to the Fantrax page that says he's fighting for an opening day job. And then boom, he gets snapped up. Now it's not logical to think that he's going to get 70 innings this year unless there's another injury. But that's what happened in this best ball league. And another thing here, Ty, just going down a tier for the non-roster, but for some of the guys in AAA with that starting rotation or bullpen fillers, you've got Sam McWilliams, who's on a major league deal, but still has options to be sent down. Sean Reed Foley, former Blue Jay, I think former first round pick too, if I'm not mistaken, second round pick. Franklin Kilome, who we saw last year for a brief period of time. Jordan Yamamoto, who's a former Miami Marlin who came up for a cup of coffee, and Robert Zelman, who, you know, he's like Lugo, right? Up and down, drafted in the system. And then non-roster guy who's really just a starting option is Jared Eichhoff. So for their depth, they've got it. Like, good. The Mets look poised for a Mets-like season. So if things don't go well, they can still throw talent at us throughout the year, you know. And then like Blevins, Tommy Hunter, Aronis Vizcaino and Trevor Hildenberger are all notable free agents, non-roster invites. So they could all get released if it doesn't go well, or however they have their contracts set up. So there's a lot of depth in the Mets pitching, and that's kind of, you know, promising, at least from the standpoint of staying competitive, which has typically been their problem throughout a season.
Well, and honestly, like, as much as they took a lot of crap this offseason, they actually did some really good things with their depth of its offseason. So, yep. You know, they've got some good core players, and they got Khalil Lee, obviously, is a projectable bench to third outfielder type guy, and they gave up almost nothing to get him, right? So I think they just did some really interesting things as they continued to try to rebuild from what a disaster of a PR offseason they had. But I agree. All of those guys could potentially find their way into the major leagues this season. But let's get into the positional depth, which is questionable at best. So at the catcher position, there's really no one of significant note, Robbie, at the upper levels. Anybody you want to touch on?
No.
I didn't think so. Yeah, I didn't think so either. There is Matt O'Neill. He could potentially be tied to Tyler O'Neill, but we'll leave that.
There could be some sort of family lineage. But no, like they've got Caleb Joseph, who's kicked around now with some teams. And then Bruce Maxwell, who's a former, I think Bruce Maxwell is the same former the Oakland. Guy? Yeah. No, Bruce Maxwell. No, you six. I think Maxwell is the guy who did something to a delivery driver when he was with Oakland. Is that the right catcher I'm thinking of?
The age
looks about right.
I need to know about this story.
And he's got service time. Do you know what I'm talking about, Glenn? There was an incident with an Oakland catcher where I don't know if it was like gun related or like something. There was like
a thing walking up a couple years ago. And threatening a guy. Like, you know what the best part of waking up is?
Oh my God. Bruce Maxwell. You'd say that to a woman very inappropriately. But so for catching prospects, it really is just Francisco Alvarez. Who is in camp, which is great. He's a 2018 J2 signing for all of us who love the youngins, 19-year-old. Everybody else is, it's safe to say, organizational depth.
Yeah.
So,
Fodder is the word.
And I mean, you could really say the same about most of the infield. When you get to first base, like they're not there, you know.
And Glenn, until, just a reminder, we hate catchers. So we try to skip over them as fast as we can.
Is there anyone who loves catchers?
Oh yeah,
there are. Yeah. And there are leagues. There are leagues with two catchers, so it happens.
I mean, I used to be a goalie, and even I hate catchers. So that's all right.
So you know the pain. But Ty, why don't you talk about your boy in the depth system at second base?
Yeah, I mean, Jose Peraza is a guy that I was hoping could bounce back in Boston. I felt like that was the best possible spot for him to have landed last season for a rebound or a admission onto team post hype. The bottom fell out for me on Peraza last year. If you couldn't buy some at-bats in that lineup, and you played in the AL East last season, there was no pitching then, and you're not going to face lesser pitching in the NL East and in the NL in general. So I'm out on Peraza at this point. He is nothing but organizational depth here. And I think he probably signed that contract long before a lot of the other depth pieces were added, and he has slowly moved down the pecking order. So, Glenn, are you feeling any different about a Peraza heading into the season?
I have zero expectations for Peraza heading into the season. His stats don't bode well for him. His spring is not going well. I think he's going to land in the minors at best.
Yep. And similar to Brandon Drury, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
When you move to third base, sorry, Ty, if you wanted to go back, I just wanted to say Drury to me is in the same position of organizational depth. And I'm just happy he's out of Toronto. We talked about it a lot last year. Why is he taking at bats away from other players? Hopefully that's not going to happen with the Mets. But again, the Mets are a more mature team. Even losing Jose Martinez won't hurt them too much if they have to dip back to Peraza, have to dip back to Drury. But if it gets much beyond them, then it could be a little rough.
Trade time. Drew Jackson's the only other guy at second base that's really notable in the system. As a guy that was a Rule 5 pick last year.
Yeah.
Out of the Dodgers system, always notable, right? Like anybody leaving the Dodgers system at the upper levels, it deserves at least some attention given what they've done over the last couple of years. But beyond that, like, you know, Chavin Newton is a guy that could be relevant, or Shervin.
Sure. Latin.
Yep. Is a guy that could be relevant, just 21, switch hitter at single A, multi-position target type guy. But nothing really to hang your hat on just yet. So you mentioned at the third base position, Drury is there. As you get through this, you're starting to see this veteran depth, right? And the Mets did a really good job of setting themselves up to make a huge run here, because they're losing potentially Stroman, losing potentially Lindor. They have the ability to blow it up if they choose to, because they've given themselves that depth to do that. I don't think that's where they're going. I'm just saying if the world caves
in, the worst case scenario,
they're prepared to offload some stuff with this depth. So getting into the lower minors, Robbie, there's a couple guys I know that you have your eye on, so I'll let you handle the third base here.
Well, in 18 drafts, that's when I really expanded my dynasty horizons. And Mark Vientos was owned by me everywhere. He was a second round pick in 17. So the 18 headed into 18. So 17 into the 18 off season, he was one of my draft targets everywhere. And 20 was supposed to be a big year for him. We didn't get to see it. Brent Batty is in a similar situation. He was drafted in 19. We needed to see the full season for him. We didn't get to see it, but that's where the talent is within this organization on the, at the third base, corner infield position. And one of those guys might find themselves moving off of it if needed, because they aren't going to short. And short is so simple for me to talk about here because it's one guy, and it's Ronnie Mauricio. Love pronunciation. After the Mets blew up shortstop with Jimenez and Rosario leaving, it makes a lot of sense that Lindor should be the target now. Lindor should be your solution to the fact you have one guy in your system and arguably three infield prospects with some MLB legitimacy to them. You kind of want to lock up Lindor so that you don't have to really bank on the next wave coming up. Now, you talked about the possibility of blowing it up. I think blowing it up for the Mets would be a huge reset. Like, they'd have to make a lot of trades to put in a lot of different lottery tickets because they're not flush. Like, if it was Cleveland blowing it up, there's always another dude in Cleveland, right? When we had Jake on, Jake was great to talk about. You know, you got this player, you got that player. Shortstop, Cleveland just signs everybody J2-wise. But with the Mets, it hasn't been that. And the Mets are also the team who, let's all remember, traded for Cano, traded away Kelnick, and we're about to see what Kelnick can do. So, you know, I don't know if you want to kick around the infield anymore, if you want to pop to the outfield. It's a short story out there too, right? There's only a couple guys of note out there. I don't know. Am I missing something here?
No, you covered the majority for me. Moving to the outfield, like aforementioned, Khalil Lee was a high-level prospect for the Royals, and I think they kind of burnt out on him. They added some depth in that outfield over the offseason, so I think he was just an expendable guy, and I think could potentially be a sneaky pickup for the Mets, right? Like, you never know with kids at that age that get a new hitting coach, a new way of approaching the game, and all of a sudden they take off. I mean, Malik Smith is also, you know, targeted to be a non-roster guy. I'm assuming he doesn't have any opt-outs, but he will probably find his way into this lineup throughout the season, whether it's...
He has an option, Ty, so I think they'll just be able to keep him.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think he's there. I think that's the lock for him.
Yeah, so they'll probably pound him into the minors then, unless they want to move one of the guys that we mentioned in that lineup. But, you know, the depth here is really, really, really short. Because there's just not a lot of notable guys. It's a lot of older guys that are later round picks. And
college draft picks. Yep. Basically, if you look at the depth chart, it's 19 draft picks or P. Crow Armstrong. Yep. So when you're at that point, I mean, look at the Major League roster, though. They've got four legit five, if you want to count Elmora from a defensive standpoint. They've got Major League depth. So they're fine there to let it ride for a year and see what can happen. But long term, they've got some work to do. And the organization as a whole, as we're kind of showing here, if I quickly just skip down to the four starting pitcher prospects with JT Ginn, Matthew Allen, Junior Santos, and Yordani Ventura. When you can name off, like, I don't even know if we named 15 prospects of note with this organization. And that's looking, you know, that's not skimming over. Like, we're looking to see who could be some off the heel guy you could go and pick up. They got work to do building this system out. But when you have a bunch of veterans, you have time, not a lot, but you have time to give yourself to draft some college guys and see what happens. You just can't keep drafting the high school guys.
Yeah, there's some really good guys. The one J2 arm, that's really a notable one for me, is Robert Dominguez. Was signed in last year. I guess it's 19 now at this point. I can't keep track of the J2s at this point.
It went from 19 to 21. There wasn't really a 20 class, I don't think. Would Jason Dominguez's class be the 20 class?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Either way, not that important. It happened a year or two ago, but this was probably the biggest velocity arm in the J2 class last year. I spent some dollars on him in the Dynasty League. I like the arm. I like the frame. I like everything about it. So That's the one. I do like him as maybe one of their future golden tickets. I know everybody's all over Matthew Allen, and some people really like JT Ginn. Dominguez is the guy for me in this system that I'm watching with the longest or the most upside, I guess.
Okay. All right, Glenn.
Is there anybody buried in here that you like?
You know, there's not a whole lot of names that stick out to me that you guys haven't already covered. And I'm just really looking forward to seeing another full season of minor league baseball to see if any of these, you know, if there are any diamonds in the rough here that just need some proving time. But yeah, you're right. There is a lot of age and we'll say experience in these minor system that is purely just, you know, helping from a leadership perspective with these younger guys that they have. And some work at the college level would be greatly beneficial to this organization long-term.
Yeah, I mean, this team as a whole, top to bottom, like, isn't as bad as it, I think it feels for Mets fans. Like, this lineup is good. They're a little bit of exceeding expectations in the rotation away from being a playoff team. The worst thing that happened to the Mets is that the rest of their division is stacked. So they've got a long season ahead of them, but they're more than capable of making that run. I mean, James McCann, big signing for them. I like James McCann. I'm worried that he will struggle to live up to that contract. And being in New York will be a tough thing to sit on that contract. So those are the things I'm watching for this season. Anything that you're checking out, Robbie, heading into the season for the squad?
I just want to see him perform. That's my big thing. I want to see players play. And exactly what Glenn just said, just let's get some minor league stats so we can start to see the development. Because with the Mets specifically, we need new names. Because what's in there now will not bode well long-term. So we need to see what is in the organization that we are unaware of right now as a fantasy community. That's the big thing for me. We all know the starters. We all know that bench. We know the rotation. We know the ins and outs. We need to know who's in the system that we have yet to shine a light on. And they haven't been able to do it with games. So
to be clear, you're not looking forward to 50 home runs for Pete Alonso. That's what I'm hearing.
Well, obviously Pete's going to get 50 dingers, 110 RBIs, 95 runs, and it's going to be great. And that average, I'm telling you, 260, everybody, 260. And that means that OPS is going to be north of 900. I know my video stopped working, but I am pointing to the stars because that is where Mr. Alonso belongs.
Wonderful. Glenny, I want to thank you for joining us on this episode. I know you're going to hang with us for another episode that will be available to our listeners after they're done listening to this one. So thank you for joining us on this one. But it's been Robin Tyler on Dingers.
This is Dingers, way more than fantasy baseball. We keep it real when we talk and knock it straight out the park. Let's see the stats, what's the average draft position? What kind of plays you making? Check the wins above replacement. Check the lineups and the points, this I gotta see. What's your path to victory? Are they aiming for a dynasty? Get points going head to head, please don't do me no favors. We're always watching waivers, ain't no minor league, this is major. Yeah, Dingers, let's go.